Okay. So here again, according to Mehmet Ali Aja, who perhaps himself, as we mentioned earlier, apparently was promised, or at least it certainly seems that he was promised that he would be allowed, maybe as he did in Turkey, to escape from prison if he went ahead and implicated the Bulgarians. A couple of years after his original implication of the Bulgarians, he still hasn't gotten out of jail. Perhaps Mehmet Ali Aja, and this is just speculation, is deciding to start waving some of his cards around, and he takes an opportunity in court to suddenly implicate Francesco Pazienza in the Bulgarian thesis, coaching, in terms of putting together the Bulgarian thesis. He also starts the trail leading to Pazienza. Pazienza himself turns around and says he gave information to Claire Sterling, the leading exponent not only of the, quote, terror network that blames everything that ever happened in the world on the Soviet Union, but also the leading exponent of the KGB theory, KGB shot the Pope theory. Claire Sterling, of course, got most of her information to begin with from not only Francesco Pazienza, but Paul Henze, who you've talked about earlier, former CIA station chief, man working with, among others, Ruzi Nazar, Turkish Grey Wolf Nazi, and former CIA agent. So we've got the trail leading here also to Claire Sterling and connecting Claire Sterling by her own admission to General Giuseppe Santavito, who we mentioned earlier, high-ranking P2 man, head of Super Seize Me, the Italian intelligence wing that at the very least planned the Bulgarian thesis story and planted it through Pazienza with Mehmet Ali Aja. Of course, as we have seen over the broadcast, P2 was very probably involved in more than merely planting the bogus Bulgarian theory, but was in fact probably involved with the actual assassination attempt. So two of the leading exponents of the theory directly involved in a fairly direct, fairly open admission on the part of Francesco Pazienza of manipulating events.
Okay, now recall that Pazienza obtained the Billy Gates story in cooperation not only with Michael Ledeen, but also Arno de Borgrav, another person who's been instrumental in circulating the so-called Bulgarian thesis. So we have Claire Sterling associated with Santavito, possibly associated with Pazienza associated with de Borgrav and Michael Ledeen, and that comprises the core. And of course, Paul Henze is associated with Ruzi Nazar and CIA, and is the former CIA station chief in Turkey. So the people, what we're beginning to find is that the same people involved with generating the Bulgarian thesis apparently were involved in a very direct way with the cast of players that has helped to bring that Bulgarian thesis around. Now, we've really taken a look at Father Morlian and his presence in the same building as one of the Bulgarian suspects, one of the accused. And we've also looked at how Morlian has long-standing association with U.S. intelligence and connects up with Ledeen and Pazienza. We've taken a look at charges by an Italian mafioso that the Camorra was involved in setting up a cooperative pattern between Aja and the Secret Service. We've looked at corroboration that, in fact, the head of the Camorra did meet with Aja when he was in prison. We don't know for sure what he spoke about, but it does lead credence to Giovanni Pandico's claim. And we've also looked at the claim made by Aja himself. Now, of course, his credibility is open to question, but Aja himself claims that Francesco Pazienza helped work out a deal, helped speak with him when he was in prison. Now, going back to Michael Ledeen, we're going to begin looking at an even more direct connection between Michael Ledeen and the so-called Bulgarian thesis. Worth recalling now that Michael Ledeen worked directly for the Super Seize Me and the Seize Me Group. Reading now from the Wall Street Journal of August 8, 1985, this is a story by Jonathan Quitney of the Wall Street Journal, headlined, Why an Italian Spy Got Closely Involved in the Billy Gate Affair. Subtitled, Journalist Michael Ledeen, Pursuing the Story in 1980, Got Agent Pazienza's Aid. And just going to read you a short section of the story about Michael Ledeen's work for Seize Me. Billy Carter wasn't the only one allegedly getting money from a foreign government. Mr. Pazienza says that Mr. Ledeen sometimes worked for Italian intelligence and received at least $120,000 from Seize Me, plus expenses in 1980 or 81. At least some of the money was paid into a Bermuda bank account, Mr. Pazienza says. At Seize Me, Mr. Pazienza says, Mr. Ledeen warranted a coded identification, Z3. Mr. Ledeen says he never was called Z3, that I can remember, unquote. He says a consulting firm he owned, ISI, undertook work for Seize Me either late in 1980 or early in 1981, and the price may well have been $100,000, I can't remember, unquote. Seize Me may have paid another fee for other work in 1980, Mr. Ledeen says. He says his travel expenses were also paid, and he says, quote, I had, I think, for a period of a few months, a personal account in Bermuda, unquote. So basically, the equivocation here notwithstanding, Michael Ledeen is confirming having worked as a basically a contract agent for the CSME using the resources of his consulting firm.
Yeah, if there was ever any doubt in anybody's mind, or if there still was any doubt in anybody's mind at this point, whether Michael Ledeen was a legitimate journalist, having been a journalist myself and knowing lots of journalists, anybody that could forget whether or not they had been paid $100,000 in 1 year by Italian military intelligence must be doing awfully well in their journalism. You know, most journalists just can't lose a $100,000 payment that way. Michael Ledeen appears to have been able to, and one has to think that he's doing a little besides just stringing for the Washington Times. Anyway, but as Dave mentioned, a direct admission on the part of Michael Ledeen that he was paid probably about $100,000 and it probably wound up in a bank account in Bermuda somewhere while he was doing work for Italian military intelligence. Again, also one has to wonder, as a consultant, what kind of consultation does a military intelligence group have to hire a journalist for to the tune of $120,000-something? Okay, going on, reading another article from the New York Times of October 30th, 1984. The headline is, Italy Dropping Some Charges. Dateline, Rome. Judge Ilario Martella, the Italian magistrate who investigated the assassination attempt on Pope John Paul II, has announced that he will not take action against six men who had been named in a purported plot to kill Lech Walesa. The announcement was made Friday. The men who had been named as co-conspirators by Mehmet Ali Aja, who was convicted of shooting the Pope. Mr. Aja later retracted his part of his testimony concerning a plot against Mr. Walesa, the founder of the Solidarity movement in Poland. Three of the men, Sergei I. Antonov, Todor S. Ivazov, and Zelyo K. Vasiliev, are Bulgarians who will be brought to trial for taking part in the plot to kill the Pope. Only Mr. Antonov is in custody. Mr. Ivazov and Mr. Vasiliev are in Bulgaria. The three others are, please note, Luigi Scricciolo. I'm going to spell that S-C-R-I-C-C-I-O-L-O. Luigi Scricciolo, an Italian union leader, Ivan Donchev, a Bulgarian diplomat, and Salvatore Scordo, another Italian union leader. In his 1,243-page report, 13 pages of which were released Friday, Judge Martella said he had decided, quote, not to begin legal action against the first five men for the crime of massacre and illegal transport, possession, and transport of explosives, unquote. The charges dropped against Mr. Scordo were, quote, for the crime of massacre, unquote. So a couple of interesting things here. The first off is basically, at this point, as of October of 1984, Ilario Martella, the Italian magistrate, and again, they have investigating magistrates in Italy. This is different. The investigations are headed up by judges, so we're not talking about the people who are judging the cases in the normal courtroom sense. These are investigating magistrates, not dissimilar to district attorneys. But Ilario Martella, who is, again, bear in mind, he's basically in the position of prosecutor. This is not an impartial judge, but a prosecutor, is dropping the charges as far as an alleged attempt against Lech Walesa's life on the planned by the Bulgarian defendants, along with, among others, Luigi Scricciolo. Now, this is interesting for a variety of reasons, one of which is the fact that this is another part of Aja's story, such as his meeting, supposed meeting with Antonov and others in Antonov's apartment, that has fallen out, a piece of Aja's story that has fallen apart. What is also interesting is what we're going to talk about now is Mr. Luigi Scricciolo, the Italian union leader, who is supposedly going to be involved in this plot to kill Lech Walesa. Again, going back to Poland, back to the ostensible reason for the Bulgarian plot to kill the Pope was to prevent the Pope from being able to incite discontent in communist Poland. And so supposedly also was the reason that the Bulgarians wanted to kidnap Solidarity leader Lech Walesa.
And this at a time when the Pope was and the Kremlin, rather, were on better terms with regard to the Solidarity Union. So make of that what you will. Now, it's worth noting here that we're going to bring another name of a judge in here. This is Judge Ferdinand Imposimato, okay? I-M-P-O-S-I-M-A-T-O. Ferdinand Imposimato is the judge. And we're also going to talk about what happened to his brother, Francesco Imposimato. Now, Judge Imposimato was investigating, basically, charges of Bulgarian espionage in Italy. And specifically, one of the people he was investigating in connection with, basically, as a proposed Bulgarian espionage agent, was Luigi Scricciolo, one of the people against whom charges were withdrawn. And by the way, it's worth noting that Aja retracted his initial statement, concerning the alleged plot against Lech Walesa. Now, Ferdinand Imposimato was investigating alleged Bulgarian espionage in Italy, including Luigi Sricciolo. Now, we've looked at a lot of unfortunate things that befell various judges who were investigating one aspect or another of the P2 complex. Judge Accorsio was machine gunned while investigating P2. Judge Ambrosoli was killed while investigating Sindona's finances. Judge Alessandrini was killed while investigating Roberto Calvi's finances. Judge Carlo Palermo, who was investigating Stibom, narrowly escaped being killed by a bomb just as the Pope shooting was undertaking was getting underway. Let's take a look at what happened to Francesco Imposimato, the brother of Ferdinand Imposimato, who was looking into the alleged Bulgarian espionage activities of Luigi Sricciolo and his wife, a woman named Paola Elia, P-A-O-L-A-E-L-I-A. Remember that name? We're coming back to her in a second. Research credit for the following story goes to Ted Rubenstein, translation by Jonathan Marshall of the Oakland Tribune. This is from La Repubblica of October 12, 1983. Francesco Imposimato, brother of investigating magistrate Ferdinando, was brutally killed. Ferdinando has been investigating criminal organizations and their financing, including the fake kidnapping of Sindona, terrorism of the extreme left, mafia and drug traffic, even politico-military espionage. It was Imposimato who identified and had arrested members of the anonymous sequestri who had as heads Berlioccini, and Bergamelli, and was grouped in Marseille, Sardinia, and Calabria. He investigated the fake kidnapping of Sindona, the murder of Domenico Balducci, mafia boss, and discovered much about Carboni and Pazienza. He personally went to Sardinia and Sicily to investigate the drug traffic. He investigated the espionage activities of Luigi Sricciolo and Paolo Elia, who were involved in the alleged plot against Lech Walesa on the part of Bulgarian agents, but now the killer Aja is accused of slander. Reading that last sentence again. He, meaning Judge Ferdinando Imposimato, whose brother was murdered, he investigated the espionage activities of Luigi Sricciolo and Paolo Elia, who were involved in the alleged plot against Lech Walesa on the part of Bulgarian agents, but now the killer Aja is accused of slander. We're going to hear more about Paolo Elia right now.
Okay, and again, we're going to read a translation by Jonathan Marshall, provided by Ted Rubenstein. The small section excerpted here is from the Italian newspaper Corriere della Sera for April 19th, 1983, talking about Paolo Elia. And it says, Paola Elia, wife of Luigi Sricciolo, denies being part of his spy net. Also denies passing Michael Adine's card to Loris Sricciolo. Loris Sricciolo is Luigi's brother. Quote, yes, I knew him in the USA, meaning she knew Michael Adine. I didn't know he was assistant to Haig. For me, he was head of the Quarterly Review of Culture, unquote. So we have Paola Elia, the wife of Luigi Sricciolo, in the process of denying that she was part of Luigi Sricciolo's spy ring that was at first also being proffered as part of the Bulgarian thesis, and that later fell apart. There obviously an allegation has been made that she passed Michael Adine's card to Loris Sricciolo, but she says that she didn't know at the time that he was an assistant to Alexander Haig. Now, bear in mind, Alexander Haig at this time was not only a member of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, the Knights of Malta, but was also Secretary of State for the Reagan administration.
Actually, he wasn't technically a member of SMOM at this time. That would have been shortly afterward.
Good
but
point.
He was part of the Reagan administration.
And soon to be a member.
Soon to be a member of the Knights of Malta. We don't know how much his services with regard to the Sricciolo connection may have had something to do with it. But Paolo Elia, originally charged in the plot against Lech Walesa, alleged by Mehmet Ali Aja, although she denies passing Ladine's card to Loris Sricciolo, who we're about to talk about, she admits knowing Michael Ladine. So that's an interesting connection, again, a direct intersection between Michael Ladine and the Bulgarian connection, or a section thereof. Research credit for the following goes to one, a member of our listenership, and this listener obtained this book from Germany. This is a German book about the P2 Lodge, and its headline, translated from German, is The Abortive Rise of the P2 Lodge. It's by Giuseppe D'Alema, D'Alema, and the translation is by Werner Reit. Although it's actually, obviously, an Italian book published in Germany and translated by Werner Reit, R-A-I-T-H. We're not going to read you any of this book here. However, in the back of this book, again, The Abortive Rise of the P2 Lodge by Giuseppe D'Alema, there is a complete photocopied list of the available membership of the P2 Lodge. And number 125 on the leadership of P2 Lodge is none other than Loris Sricciolo, the person to whom Paolo Ilia, the wife of Luigi Sricciolo, denies passing Michael Adine's card. So apparently the Sricciolo family intersects directly with P2.
It's also rather interesting, again, that we have Luigi Sricciolo, who's accused of being a Bulgarian spy, accused of being part of the Bulgarian terror network by people like Michael Adine, and is also accused of plotting to kidnap Lech Wałęsa to benefit the Eastern Bloc and the Soviet Union as part of this whole campaign that the assassination attempt on the Pope is alleged to be part of. At the same time, we have his brother being a member of the P2, the same organization that has, for the exactly opposite political motives, been pursuing this all along. And then later on, this allegation of Luigi Sricciolo as a leftist agent is seen to fall apart and to be merely more of the same stuff that seems to have been manipulated by Francesco Pazienza and Michael Adine and others, and put into the mouth of Mehmet Ali Aja. Again, it's a strange coincidence to believe that that on one hand that one brother is a member of the P2 and the other man is working desperately against the P2 on behalf of Bulgarian intelligence. Okay, we're going to read another short segment of an article right now, and this is from the New York Times for August 14th, 1984. The headline is Red Brigades, 180 Red Brigade suspects named in Italian indictment. Dateline Rome, UPI Wire story. Investigators indicted 180 purported members of the Red Brigades today on charges related to the abduction of Brigadier General James L. Dozier of the United States and other terrorist activities. The indictments follow the third judicial investigation of the Red Brigade since the abduction and killing of former Prime Minister Aldo Moro in 1978. Those indicted include a former union leader and his wife, who are accused of trying to buy for Bulgarian agents any information the Red Brigades may have obtained from General Dozier after his kidnapping in December 1981. Nothing came of the approaches by the labor leader, Luigi Sricciolo, a former head of the International Office of the Labor Federation, UIL, and his wife, Paola, according to the indictment. General Dozier was freed by the police after 42 days. Now, interesting, there's a whole bunch of interesting things about this little segment, and as is becoming the case, or has been the case for a long time with the Mediterranean merry-go-round, the tentacles are everywhere. We talked earlier in the broadcast about the fact that Ed Wilson claims to have trained the Red Brigades. We also know from earlier articles that we have read that Licio Gelli is credited with being one of the founding members. The Red Brigades also, they mentioned that this is one of the major investigations since the abduction and assassination of Aldo Moro. Again, the Aldo Moro case was yet another case that one has to at least lean towards ascribing to the strategy of tension, in that Aldo Moro was going to include the communists in the government for the first time, and of course his assassination by the Red Brigades promptly turned the vast part of the electorate of Italy against the communists in Italy. Here we have the Red Brigades, founded by Licio Gelli, arch-fascist, trained by Ed Wilson, a mysterious right-wing, quote, ex-CIA agent involved with all kinds of bizarre activities all over the world on behalf of the CIA's right-wing covert agenda, involved with such things as basically the destruction of the possibility for peaceful political coexistence between the communists and the mainline parties in Italy through their killing of Aldo Moro, also involved in the abduction of Brigadier General James Dozier, which at the time, although this is hard to alter, keep all these things straight, but at the time was another major blow on behalf of the Reagan administration's war on terrorism and more evidence of how, you know, the U.S. had to strike back. Those who remember that case will remember that the reason that that they were able to find and free James Dozier was with help from the Italian mafia, from the Italian underworld, and now we find out that supposedly involved with in an attempt to buy information from the Red Brigades was Luigi Sricciolo and his wife Paola, both of them part of the bogus attempt to kidnap Lech Wałęsa, which actually seems to be merely part of the KGB shot the Pope disinformation theory. And Paola, the wife of Luigi Sricciolo, has certainly been has gone on record as suggesting that Michael Adine was involved with Alexander Haig in some of these doings. And Luigi Sricciolo himself, his brother, is a key member of P2, Loris Sricciolo. So again, many tentacles, but as usual, the tentacles all seem to come back to the same place.
Now, on the subject of Luigi Sricciolo, reviewing an article that we looked at in our last show, this is from the San Jose Mercury News of March 24th, 1983. It's an AP story out of New York, headlined, NBC says CIA agents under investigation. It reads as follows. The Reagan administration is investigating whether the CIA station chief in Rome and two of his agents, disobeyed orders in connection with the investigation of the shooting of Pope John Paul II, NBC News reported Wednesday. The three, whom the network by law did not identify, raised the ire of officials in Washington because they refused to stop discrediting the so-called Bulgarian connection in the inquiry of the papal shooting, NBC said. Mehmet Ali Aja, a Turkish gunman serving a life sentence for the attempted assassination of the Pope on May 13, 1981, has told Italian investigators that several Bulgarians helped him plan the attack. Quoting an unidentified key administration source, NBC said the three may be fired because they allegedly disobeyed orders issued by National Security Advisor William Clark and CIA Director William Casey. NBC said the Rome agents may have downplayed the Bulgarian connection because they did not want attention drawn to A, an alleged close working relationship between them and an Italian labor leader who was arrested as a Bulgarian spy. That Italian labor leader is, of course, Luigi Switchiolo, the aforementioned Luigi Switchiolo, whose wife was apparently on very good terms with Michael Adeen, whose brother is a member of P2. So here we have the possibility of an alleged, of the CIA working directly with Luigi Switchiolo, whose wife was involved with the Red Brigade scam, the alleged Red Brigade scam, to channel information to the Bulgarian Secret Service. Interestingly enough, the second possible reason why NBC cites them as these agents as discrediting the Bulgarian thesis, and we read this last time, the possible use of a gun and drug smuggling route between Sofia, Bulgaria, and Milan, Italy, to run CIA agents into Eastern Europe. That, of course, is the Western intelligence connected and practically run STEBOM that we looked at last week.
Okay, and one last article before we get to the summation tonight. And this article is from the same Covert Action Information Bulletin that we have been reading from this evening, number 23, dated spring of 1985. It's a small inset article headlined, Aja admits U.S. guidance denies Bulgarian connection! And it goes like this. The free world enthusiasm for Aja's confessions suffered a jolt in January 1985 when it was revealed that he had written a letter to a U.S. military attaché stationed in Rome implying that he had made his, quote, confessions at the direction of U.S. personnel. The letter, written in Turkish and mailed to the U.S. Embassy in August 1983, has been verified as, quote, authentic by both Martella, that's Prosecuting Magistrate Ilario Martella, and an embassy official. It was received by Captain Ernest Till, turned over to Italian authorities, and printed in Martella's official indictment. A translation was printed in the Italian newspaper La Repubblica on January 18, 1985. According to the Washington Post, the letter begins by implying that a long-standing relationship existed between Till and Aja. It then continues, quote, for 2 years you have done everything necessary in view of our mutual friendship and interest, unquote. The letter then complains about the skepticism expressed by some U.S. news organizations over Aja's shifting claims. Quote, what crime have I committed? Aja asks. You told me, begin, and I began to speak. Well, as to what, how obvious that seems to indict certain elements of the U.S., and certainly we've seen a large variety of evidence tonight that that suggests at the very least, that the hand of the United States Central Intelligence Agency was directly involved with putting together and implementing the Bulgarian theory. As we have looked at over the broadcast, certainly there has been American intelligence involvement all along. We're going to try and sum up some few points and then maybe cast a few ideas onto the waters as to what might be the actual circumstances surrounding this incredible case that we've been following for the last 5 weeks.
Before we get into our summation, just one curious little item here that I'll read. Of course, Claire Sterling has been perhaps the single most vocal proponent of the Bulgarian thesis. However, at least at one point in her investigation of the Pope shooting, she was able to poo-poo that very same Bulgarian thesis. Reading once again from Covert Action Information Bulletin's issue of number 23, spring of 1985. And they have a little inset article called Claire Sterling, Terrorism Expert. Immediately after Aja shot the Pope, the Western media sought out the opinions of Claire Sterling, Terrorism Expert, unquote. Are you convinced there was no broad conspiracy against the Pope? Asked People magazine of June 1st, 1981. Quote, some people are saying, this is Claire Sterling speaking here, some people are saying that the Russians plotted this because of the Pope's role in Poland, replied Sterling, but I think that's crazy. If it was an organized plot by a serious group, she continued, I suspect there would have been a better getaway plan. Maybe this was a sort of kamikaze mission, but usually these people are skillful at escapes. There would have been some distraction in the crowd, some escape route. I could envision a small splinter group of Muslim fanatics with Aja among them vowing to get the Pope, but more likely he made the final decision alone. Apparently not yet cued in on the appropriate explanation for Ajah's assassination attempt, Sterling is surprisingly lucid. She notes that the Pope isn't perceived as just the head of the Roman Catholic Church, but as the supreme symbol of the intrusion of Western civilization into the Muslim world, unquote. She notes Ajah's threat to kill the Pope in 1979 and places it in the context of the Iranian Revolution and the attack on the Grand Mosque in Mecca. She calls the Pope's trip to Turkey in November of 1979 a terrible mistake, unquote. She also connects Ajah directly with the Grey Wolves, the paramilitary wing of the neo-Nazi National Action Party, unquote, and she states as a matter of fact that his escape from prison was engineered by the Grey Wolves, so apparently something occurred to cause Claire Sterling to change her tune rather dramatically.
Okay, now, we no possible way we could actually sum up what we've seen, what we've listened to, and what we have shared.
If we could have summed it up, we would have summed it up.
Yeah, right, exactly. We would have done one 15-minute special instead of five-hour specials. Some thoughts, and at this point, I must say, since this is really the first time I've had a chance to speculate on these things, and I'm going to give, Dave obviously is going to get a shot, too. We've got about 15 minutes. We're going to take a few of them just to speculate. And everything up till now has been, to the best of our ability to do so, pure fact, or at least pure documented assertion by responsible parties. In terms of speculating, I think that there's some really important things to look at. One of them is, as we mentioned earlier in the broadcast tonight, the fact that... Well, the first thing to mention is the fact that the Bulgarian thesis holds no water whatsoever. I think that's the most important point that anybody should walk away from this particular series of broadcasts with.
Well, it's too bad that we don't have another. Well, maybe it's just as well. If we had another show, we could just take the Bulgarian thesis and dissect it from a logical standpoint, and basically it comes up as so much fertilizer. The point that we've been attempting to drive home during the course of the last couple of broadcasts is not only quite possibly who is behind the pulling of the trigger, but perhaps the motivation behind it and the people who concocted the Bulgarian thesis, rather than dealing with the incredible contradictions in the Bulgarian thesis itself. Suffice it to say that there has never at any point been one shred of independent evidence cited to support the Bulgarian thesis, and that perhaps is the single most important aspect of the whole thing. Still, even in Western society, the view has basically, especially in Western society, the view has basically taken root that the Russians shot the Pope, in spite of the fact that that is entirely a media event. There is not one shred of evidence, no facts whatsoever to support that.
That's right, and not a single responsible journalist who has done any investigation into this has come up with anything to support that. The leading exponents, as mentioned, are Michael Adeen, Claire Sterling, and Arno de Borgrav, all of them linked to the CIA, all of them long-line, extremely committed right-wingers who have been involved not only in you know, right-wing-tinged journalism, but in fact in right-wing politics, as we mentioned in the case of Sterling and Ladine working with the people beaming information into the 1960 elections in Italy, et cetera, et cetera.
Also Paul Henze, of course, directly involved with Nazar, as well as CIA station chief in Turkey. Strong possibility of CIA Grey Wolf links, aside from the Nazar connection. And, of course, Arno de Borgrav also worked with Pazienza and Ladine on the Billy Carter Gaddafi connection. And, of course, that was set up in part by Frank Turpel, and we find him cropping up, rolling around, we should say, in the Mediterranean merry-go-round here.
That's right. And Claire Sterling, who, as Dave mentioned, just within a couple of weeks after the shooting, was, as the covert action article suggests, fairly lucid about the actual responsibilities. Within a few weeks after that, or a few months actually after that, had received basically all of Paul Henze's notes and wrote her Reader's Digest article that was the first major article in a major publication to jump the Bulgarian theory off the dock. That was Paul Henze's work, as is mentioned elsewhere in this covert action issue. Now, Paul Henze's work in the Atlantic Commentary, not only, but his own private notes that were given to Claire Sterling to write those articles with. So the hand of Paul Henze, the fine hand of Paul Henze, is very important here. And again, as we mentioned, a man with direct connections to Ruzi Nazar, ex-SS Oberleutnant, Turkish Nazi, and CIA agent. And Henze himself, former CIA station chief in Ankara, Turkey. So, first of all, totally disregard the Bulgarian theory as anything except what it is actually, a roadmap to the actual perpetrators of the plot, or if not the plot, at least the cover-up. Now, this is the most difficult part, because what we may have here, and this is my personal guess based on all the hours and hours and hours of work we put in on this, it is possible at this point that we have a separate cover-up and assassination. That does not mean we do, but we possibly do. I think that there can be very little doubt that from examining the information involved, that the assassination attempt sprang out of probably two things. One, geopolitical events that Pope John Paul II was becoming involved in, namely an attempt to decrease the tension in Eastern Europe and to perhaps come up with some solution for the Cold War and the Middle Eastern situation. On the other hand, besides those geopolitical reasons, there were the very real reasons that were probably responsible for the death of John Paul I, namely the involvement of high Vatican officials and basically almost the entire of the right wing of Italian society in illegal, fascist-oriented financial and political activities. Now, either one of these two reasons would have been enough for a coterie of fanatics, and we're talking about a fairly large coterie here. We're not talking about three or four of them, but obviously a large group of people who are very interested in these things. Either one of these reasons would have been enough to prompt an assassination plot.
I really don't think we should get into speculating too much here, because I think we've pretty much drawn the... I'm
going
to give a toss out a couple of thoughts, then I think we ought to give out DAVCorp, and I think we
ought to... Well, we're going to. We've only got a few minutes, but I think since we've done this for so long and we haven't tried to draw any of this together...
Well, what can be concluded is this, that the Bulgarian thesis obviously goes against the grain of what figures to have been going on at the time. If the Pope and the Kremlin are working out better relations, that's a very strange time for the Soviets to decide to shoot Pope John Paul II. The fact that he was shot at a time when the Kremlin was drawing closer to the Vatican, when they were reaching some sort of accommodation on the subject of solidarity, suggests that if there was a high-level motivation to actually pull the trigger on the Pope, that it was accomplished, that the orders, the marching orders, came from the other side, which is why the connection of Theodore Shackley with Giuseppe Santavito of P2 and of SMOM, recall that William Casey is a member of SMOM at the same time, that would suggest that if there was a high-level conspiracy to shoot the Pope, that the marching orders came from the other side. Now, as Claire Sterling noted, the actual plot itself was a fairly amateurish plot. However, Mehmet Ali Agha and the Grey Wolves, who are known to have been involved, the one thing we could say for sure is that Agha and the Grey Wolves were definitely there pulling the trigger on the Pope. How they managed to get into St. Peter's Square and to get the funding that they had, and how some of them managed to get as far as they did, suggests the possibility, and this is my view, is that while the Grey Wolf faction headed up by Oral Chelik wanted to kill the Pope for their own reasons, essentially resenting him as Sterling noted, the symbol of Western intrusion on Islamic culture, that the Theodore Shackley Super S group and elements within BND as well, because Agha traveled all over Europe, assisted that conspiracy in such a way as to make sure they got to St. Peter's Square and were able to pull the trigger, and then saw to it that the conspiracy fell through. In other words, Agha had planned on escaping St. Peter's Square. Obviously, he was apprehended. Once in prison, he was then there to be squeezed by the P2-related national security apparatus of Italy. And, of course, Agha, being a relatively savvy individual, as he has proved to be, would have noted the fate of other people who had... other political prisoners in Italian jails who did not produce the kind of information the authorities wanted them to produce, whether that was silence or whether that was disinformation. Witness Arsan, witness Carlo Koffler, witness, well, Sindona wasn't gone at that time, but the casualty list is long and pretty impressive.
I would agree with you completely, and as a matter of fact, I would suggest a couple of things. One, that there's a good possibility that, as you mentioned, the clumsiness of the plot was probably due to the fact that it was being manipulated at a distance so as not to tip off probably a group of just, honest to goodness, if there is such a thing, neo-fascist fanatics to do something that they might feel would benefit Islam and greater Turkey. But as you said, manipulated at a distance, hence somewhat clumsy, but also left in such a way that they could then be manipulated later on. I would suggest that probably complicity in the whole plot probably ends at Bekir Çelenk, this is just a guess, but if he was the paymaster, that tends to suggest that he may have in fact have been the person who was the direct link between Stibom, and as a high-ranking official of Stibom himself, he knew how important it was for something, a large rock, to be cast in the way of any kinds of investigations into P2, the Vatican Bank, and drug and gun smuggling, that probably that there was no knowledge, and again, just a guess, past Bekir Cilenc, but that probably Bekir Cilenc was the key contact between the Super Sismi, Santovito, Shackley group, and however that might be constituted in the actual assassination itself. And so, of course, Bekir Cilenc, yet another one of the people who met his untimely end behind prison bars.
One of the things that should be talked about, too, is the World Anti-Communist League, which has proved in the 1980s to be a de facto device of American foreign policy, both in with regard to the Contras and with regard to the death squads in El Salvador and elsewhere in Latin America. Ruzi Nazar's role as the latest WACL representative, our latest ABN representative to the WACL convention, his history of association with U.S. intelligence and association with Henza raises the specter that perhaps WACL elements could have been involved in this as well. And the association between the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations and some of the Italian fascists around Ordine Nuovo and so forth, also and the mutual presence, too, of Abdullah Kotli and Stefano Della Chiaia on the same plane going into Miami, also suggests association there. The Italian fascist Grey Wolf connection is something to contemplate in terms of involvement in the initial decision to shoot the Pope.
As a matter of fact, again, speculating, I would tend to think that the American intelligence involvement is probably through some sort of the equivalent of an American Super Sismi, that whose connections to the Italian right wing, Stibom and these other groups, was more through interface groups like the WACL groups than anything through direct channels, because obviously shooting the Pope is not the kind of thing that, even in the CIA, even at its most secretive levels, that memos are going to be passed around about. And that in reality, probably the elements in the CIA that are responsible or involved, at least in the cover-up, if not in the order for the assassination attempt, were probably operating through sort of cutouts. And some of those cutouts were probably elements of the World Anti-Communist League. Again, this is just speculation.
Yeah, there's at this point, I think we should definitely cut the speculation short, aside from the fact that we have to go. I think past the point you can confuse yourself with speculating. I think taking a look at the overall lay of the land, what we've seen is a long pattern with regard to Italy, where the strategy of tension scenario of staging crimes to discredit the left, the right staging crimes to discredit the left. Obviously, the whole Bulgarian thesis seems to fit like a glove over that. All of the people involved in shooting the Pope go to the far right. All of the people involved in generating the Bulgarian thesis go to the far right. And indeed, as we've seen, an awful lot of the people engaged in the developing the Bulgarian thesis also have hard, hard circumstantial links connecting them with the people who are involved in the pulling of the triggers and the various machinations with regard to the crime itself. So the possibility of the Pope shooting as a provocation, and recall the improving links between the Vatican and the Kremlin, stands very, very large here.
And last but not least, as Dave mentioned, we have all these direct contacts between the people who actually pulled the trigger and the people in the far right in Italy and elsewhere. But more importantly, neither one of these groups could have performed the act and promulgated the story without direct connection into Western intelligence, and all of that that implies, including Western intelligence's journalistic assets, of which Sterling Ledeen et al. Are merely the most obvious members, but of which there are quite a few members than that, who are not as well known and unfortunately have not, perhaps some of them, been identified yet as being intelligence assets. Anyway, as Dave said, that at that point we probably better wrap up speculation because we're running out of time.
No doubt about it.
Yes, and also because, as Dave mentions, the information, although I don't know if you said it this time, but I think it's a known theory of ours, that the information is best left to stand up on itself, but this was an opportunity for us to throw some things out that perhaps we've been thinking about.